Hello, this is Boris Zukov, and you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D, from his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits, and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
All right, guys, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is our Thanksgiving edition of Live and in Color with Wolfie D. And I got my man, Jimmy, across the gobble gobble street. What are you doing, man?
Duh.
Duh? You're doing
Nit.
Duh.
Nit.
Oh, you're speaking Russian. I get it.
Nostrovia.
Well, do they celebrate Thanksgiving in Russia? I doubt it.
We cannot afford turkey. We eat very small pheasant.
The pilgrims didn't come there either.
In Mother Russia, the great commandant Putin, he gives us small pheasant for entire family. Yes, very nice man.
Anyway,
I lost it. Sorry.
It's not a bad Russian accent.
It's like moose and squirrel, you know?
Yes. Rocky Bullwinkle.
Oh, man. Yeah, but dude, we got a cool show today, man. We got Boris Zukov on the show.
Yes. I'm very interested because I don't know Boris. I've never met Boris. And this is one of those ones that, most of the people we bring on, I've had interaction with. Boris, I have not, so I'm looking forward to this and finding out more about Mr. Zukov.
Yes, Mr. Zukov. That's what we'll call him. Premier Putin brings you many tidings. Yeah, but seriously, so I've known Boris just a little bit, just a small fraction of a bit. Guy that got me in the biz, Ken Steele, he knew him. He was trained by him. And anyway, he was out there, and that was one of the first matches I ever got to see Boris wrestle was Kenny. And long story short, I was just about to quickly do something here, put you over real quick. 122 episodes, and 121 of them, you've booked the guest.
For
one.
I need to take the book for a while.
I'm taking the book over. Oh, my God. Quickly veer to the left, kids. Yeah. This is.
We're about to go out of business.
We're about to go out of business.
We're about to fold, buddy. No, kidding. Hey, in all seriousness, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Man, I don't know. We're going to go to see family in Virginia, I think. Just kind of hang out. Be kind of cool. I get my son for Christmas this year, so we do back and forth. I'll get him for Thanksgiving.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. No, we do back and forth on the holidays, and so long story short, I'm getting him for Christmas, so I don't really care what we do this year. I don't have my son, man, so you know how it is.
Thanksgiving, the family, the family model of today isn't what it used to be. We know this, and it's just not the same anymore, man. You know,
it isn't. No, you're right.
Really not.
Dude, we could go to my granny's house and have 30 people in that room, and now it's like maybe 12. You know what I mean? I mean, and I'm not considering deaths and stuff like that, but I'm talking about just like people just don't really get around each other anymore, man. It's definitely something that I feel like my dad and his brother and sisters try to keep a going. Yeah. But it just doesn't really feel the same to me, and I'm sure it doesn't feel the same to you for sure, because it's just not. But I love the food. I am a Thanksgiving fan, But
I enjoy the food.
Yeah,
the other day, because I guess we're gonna go to her mom's and everything, her parents, and she's like, "Do you have a dish for Thanksgiving that you cook?" I said, "I ain't never cooked Thanksgiving in my life." I can cook, but I don't do Thanksgiving. I've never had to, Go somewhere else,
Yeah, of course.
But
where is the best Thanksgiving meal you've ever had? Where would you say? Is that your mom? Was it your?
Because we always went to my grandma's.
Okay.
And then after that, it seemed like, I was in a relationship or something. So probably their parents,
Sure.
But I just remember, you know, I think everybody does. You know, anybody that's my age remembers grandma. And,
exactly. That kind of that's what I was going to say. Yes. Yeah. Grandma's food. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, man, the dressing ain't been the same, or the stuffing, or whatever you call it in your part of the world.
The only thing that has improved, I will say, is the introduction of the fried turkey.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my God. Yes. Because,
honestly, back in the day, I liked the dark meat. Wink, wink. Yeah. No. joke. But I did not. The white meat was so dry and everything, man. But now with these fried turkeys, it's all good.
It is all good. You're right. It is.
And the turducken. I've never had the turducken, but that's a thing now.
I haven't either, but I would try that. I mean,
for sure.
It's a turkey, chicken, duck deal. Come on, man. Give it to me. Anybody out there makes us a turducken, you will be listener of the month, and we will bring you on for an episode. So send us that turducken.
Turducken.
Yeah.
Hey, man, before we get to Boris real quick, I've got to do a little plug. I got a show coming up, not wrestling.
Oh, dude, I was going to say.
Not wrestling, but I will be at a meet and greet at the beginning of a show, Brandenburg, Kentucky, on December the 2nd. It's a memorial show for Vic the Bruiser's mother. So very cool that I can do that for him. I love it.
Yeah.
I think Flash is going to be there.
Awesome.
And a bunch of other folks. But like I said, Brandenburg, Kentucky, December the 2nd. It is a combination show, actually. USWF and TCW at the Farm Bureau Community Building.
Okay.
Brandenburg, Kentucky. 874 Hillcrest Drive. And like I said, it should be a good show, man. I hope to see a lot of the people from Louisville. It's just south of Louisville is where it's at. So
I hope
to see some of my folks from Louisville and Elizabethtown and that area. Hope y'all come on out and support Vic and support me, by God.
Yeah. Hey, dude, I mean, it's going to get rarer and rarer of an opportunity
to say, I have officially become a rare appearance.
Yes. Yes.
that's where I'm at.
Add that in with you and Flash together too.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Come on. You know, if you want a Disciples of the New Church picture with Flash and Wolfie D together, Slash and Cobain, whatever, you know, that's cool, man. Dude, I'm going to have to come out that way. I know it's a long haul, but heck, man, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, very the fly, cool. Homie.
Yeah, I'm a fly. But yeah, man.
So with that, I got quite a few phone numbers here if anybody wants to get in touch with some of these folks. It's Terry England, Jimmy Walls, Brandon Wilson, Crystal Bringman, and Vic the Bruiser. So these numbers, I'm going to throw these out real quick. You got 502-381-7421, 270-312-4103, 270-670-8976. Two more, 859-749-5022 and 270-566-2263. And if you didn't catch that, rewind.
I think I just hit the Powerball, man.
I know, right? But anyway, man, I'm going to be there. It's exciting. I appreciate them asking me to do it. And can't wait to see everybody. So I'll be doing the meet and greet from 5 o'clock until 6 o'clock. And then I'll come out at intermission and sign some more, shake some hands, kiss babies, or maybe shake some babies and kiss some hands. I don't know.
Yeah, we just can't say at this point, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, let's get your boy Boris, Mr. Zukov, on here and have a good show. And again, hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving, and I hope you enjoyed this show today.
Yes, we'll be right back. After these messages.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to ProWrestlingTees.com/LiveWolfieD. Check it out.
if you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, folks, we're back. And as promised, man, we've got a cool guest today. And it's our first time in dealing with somebody overseas. We've actually contacted Moscow to get this guy on. And I think it's going to be a really cool episode. I can't wait to talk to him. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the Bolsheviks, it's Boris Zhukov. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
we got the gimmick voice today. I love it.
Yes, I love it.
Man, how's the weather over there in Moscow?
nice and chilly, like it should be.
I love it. Oh man. Hey, so Boris, in realism, what do you do these days, man? What's going on with you after the world of professional wrestling?
Oh, after the world of professional wrestling, I found me another job staying on the road. I got in the truck driving business, and I did that for around 30 years or so.
Wow. So that's awesome. You still like being on the road like that?
Yeah, because that's all I ever knew, and it keeps all the memories of all my old wrestling days, especially when I first got started, because the day when I got started, we pretty much drove everywhere. There was territories and stuff and everything. So, and it's helped keep all the memories, because now I'm a truck driver recruiter for the company that I was driving for, McElroy Truck Lines. And now I'm back in a car every day like I was years ago when I got started wrestling. So that really brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah. Man, it's funny. I guess it can go either way, because I worked the Memphis territory. That's where I broke in at. And that was basically the only one left at the time. And we were doing, 2,000 miles a week or whatever it was, something like that. Right. And I'll be honest with you, these days, if somebody calls me to go somewhere and it's more than an hour away, I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to do it. But it's good to know that, it can go either way, I guess. Still enjoy it.
Oh yeah. Because back then and stuff, in the territory days and stuff, you either liked doing it or you got out. That's just the way it was,
Yeah, exactly. And you bounced around to quite a few of them, man. I noticed in looking at your career, you worked a lot of territories, a lot of different ones.
Yeah. I had a pleasure of doing that. A long time with Jim Crockett Promotions, and then with Bill Watts down in Louisiana, and then out in Texas with Von Erickson. I had time a good long time down there in Pensacola territory with the Fullers and the Armstrongs. So
That's a hell of a career.
That's when the good old days. And then the old Knoxville, Tennessee territory too.
Man, you've definitely gotten to be in some of the the heyday, in my opinion, of wrestling, man. It won't ever come back. It won't ever be like that.
That was
awesome.
That was a special time, and I was very honored, and very fortunate to have been able to have been a part of that. So when I really got going, I first got going. I had some time in the old Georgia territory with TBS back in the day. So that was a lot of fun too. So
excluding, let's say, the WWF, let's talk just the territories, man. Which was your favorite one to work in?
My home territory, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Jim Crock Promotions, because that's the territory that I grew up and was raised in. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, and a lot of them guys that I got to watch growing up, I got to work with and travel with. So that was my most special time.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's the same for me with Memphis. I grew up on Memphis, and then when I got there, that was everything to me. Even though I got to work a little bit for Vince and Ted Turner and all the others, man, Memphis just meant something to me, especially,
the
headline.
Yeah, that was a fun time out there too, you know, with Lawler and Dundee and all that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Heck yeah. Man. Love to hear that, man. Jimmy, go ahead. Get one of your good questions in here.
Well, you know, it's funny because you were talking about my bread and butter right there, Jim Crockett Promotions and Mid-Atlantic and these kinds of things. What I always thought was so ironic, because I was a kid from that area, not that I necessarily picked up on the fact that you were starting out as Private Jim Nelson and then you turned into this foreign menace. I guess, where did that happen? Because, I mean, you're part of Slaughter's crew, and then you become like one of his arch enemies. You know what I mean? So where did that turn? Who maybe helped you with that? Or was that your decision to make that immediate turn?
Yeah. Because, you know, when I originally started in 78, I broke into business less than a year after high school. And I started out with just playing a regular Jim Nelson because there was a very good wrestler here that shoot. Do you remember Art Nelson?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause he teamed up with Johnny Weaver and all that. Yeah. I always liked the art and stuff. So, I went with the, Nelson's name and stuff and everything. And then, after a year or a couple of years in doing the independents here in Virginia, and then I went, that's when I got started in Atlanta with Jim Nelson, and then Ole Anderson helped me get started up there in Charlotte with George Scott up there at Jim Crockett Promotions, and I was just Jim Nelson there when I first went there. But then when Sergeant Slaughter came in, he was wanting somebody to do the private gimmick with and stuff, you know, and so they talked to me about doing that and everything. But when all that ran out and stuff, you know, and then finally I turned on Sarge and Canola helping Steamboat and Youngblood, so they could win the world tag belts. And then, that was going to wind up with me, cause I wanted to do the Russian gimmick and stuff, go with, Boris Zhukov. And that was the name that I came up with myself.
That's
so
awesome.
I did the thing with the Briscoes, and that was the thing back in the territory day. You could do something somewhere, and that was before all the cable TV, and I was able to do that in Charlotte and let the Briscoes break my leg, and then I moved down to Louisiana, and then Bill Watts let me get started with Boris Zhukov doing the Russian thing down there, and that's how that took off and stuff.
Okay.
And because I was able to do that there, and then Bruiser Brody helped me get over into Texas, over there with the Von Erichs, and I got over there, and when the time came, I just left there and went to Pensacola down there with Fuller and the Armstrongs. So
yes,
that's what was great about the territory days, because it was all local TVs and stuff. You didn't have all that cable. You could go from one area to the other, and nobody was seeing you anywhere else and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I just disappeared from the Mid-Atlantic territory, and I went right down to Louisiana and stuff, and just went from there. That's what was great about those old days like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this, man, because you brought up some names, Ole Anderson, Bruiser Brody, and I read some other names that you, you know, were around. It seems like kind of helped you. And all those guys are tough guys. So that says to me, if the tough guys are on your side and trying to, you know, help you out, that means you must be a pretty tough guy, too. Where'd you get your toughness from? Was it wrestling or was it before wrestling?
I don't know. No, I just it was just a special time back there, you know, and stuff. And if you worked hard and stuff, and you know, and the different guys and work and matches and stuff, you know, guys would pass it along to you. I mean, everybody always talked about, and Ole could be a grunt, man. He could be he was a natural heel anyway. I don't care if he was on TV in front of the camera or behind the scenes, producing the TV show or in the dressing room. Ole was a natural heel and stuff. But, I mean, if you worked hard and busted your butt and everything, He would help you out, and that's why I was able to go from Atlanta up to Charlotte was because of Ole. And that's the only reason I got up there. Yeah. And then Sergeant Slaughter saw me and thought I could do well with the Private Nelson gimmick and stuff. And man, he was a tremendous help because he had so many ideas and stuff. I mean, he put a script together, and we would both practice him being the sergeant and me being Private Nelson and stuff, and doing stuff that we'd be doing in the ring and stuff. And that was just great. And he helped me a whole lot. I learned a whole lot from Sarge getting to do that.
That's cool, man. Let me ask you one more question here, and Jimmy, I'll tag you back in a second.
Okay, no problem.
So, Boris, in doing the Russian gimmick, especially in those days, you know, you couldn't, a guy from Virginia could not be a Russian today. We know this because of internet and everybody knows everything now. But back then,
right,
we all know the stories of, you know, the heels that were foreign guys and the death threats and all that kind of stuff and with the fans. Tell me, like, what was your, give me your best story or something about a fan or some, you know, near trouble you got into, you know, with the fans or something.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, the thing that helped me up, I got the idea from that I wanted to do that was, I just loved Ivan Koloff. He was one of my favorite and stuff. In fact, when I first got to go to Atlanta and work Atlanta TV, and I guess is what might have helped me with Ole, is I tagged with Mike Stallings my first TV match against Ole Anderson and Ivan Koloff. And that was just great stuff, you know, because I learned so much from Ivan and everything. You know, he was a big mentor to me, and he helped me out tremendously, teaching me how to get heat and how to work that gimmick and everything. And it was down there in Alabama. Now I had an angle with Austin Idol, and I was finishing up pretty much because I was going to be leaving the territory, and he was going to be going into an angle with Jimmy Golden. Okay. And so I was working lose or leave town matches with him, and he beat me there at the end, and then Jimmy Golden hit the ring and stuff, and we pile drive to Austin, and I took the belt like I'd really won the belt and left the building with it and stuff, and this is in Birmingham, Alabama. And the fans, I couldn't hardly get out of the parking lot. They pushed past the police, and they almost turned my van over in the middle of the parking lot.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they were just nuts. They were throwing rocks and everything else and stuff. I mean, the police helped me get in the van, but the crowd got so big, and then they just started grabbing the van and rocking and stuff, and they just about turned it over. I had a time getting out of the parking lot.
Did you have a pistol?
That was back in early part. It was sometime in 1984 when that happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I'm telling you, there's been I think maybe just one time where I got to experience having that kind of heat and like you said, this is Birmingham, Alabama. I think this might have been somewhere in Mississippi, what I'm talking about. Had some little kids.
Oh, yeah. Same thing down there.
Yeah, I was working Lawler, and some little kid gave him a hat or something on his way to the ring, and I used that hat. He told me to do it, you know, use the hat to smother him or whatever. The little kid starts crying.
Oh, sure.
Well, that made the rest
of it. Yeah, Jerry was great.
I love it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of heat, and I wish I would have, you know, I wish I kind of could have been in the born a little bit earlier.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that a lot of the guys today, the young guys, they have no clue what heat is because it's gone. All that's gone now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, because you can't, I always say, you can't make somebody mad at you when they know you're trying to make them mad. I mean, you just can't do it.
Right.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, they'll end up laughing.
No, but back then it was different, man. Shoot, because we had the incident with the plane back then and stuff, you know, they got shot down and, golly, Ned, Ivan about got killed. And I remember Nikolai telling me some horrible stories that he went through too, doing it in different places and stuff. And even, yeah, and when I got up there and were tagged with him, I mean, him and Sheik, they had so much heat, man, that I that was a big, big gift to me, for me to be able to get in that spot there. But they had so much heat and stuff. I mean, it was killer heat up there. And places like Philadelphia and Boston, we had a time getting out of them buildings sometimes.
Yeah,
it was really scary in some of them places.
Oh yeah,
because this was before the thing with Reagan and Gorbachev and the wall coming down. That was a bad heat period before all that happened. You had to watch every time me and Nikolai would go somewhere to eat and stuff. We'd have to sit out by ourselves. And you had to watch people and stuff because people try to come up and act like they want to ask for our autograph and then try to spit in our food.
That's what I was going to ask. You know? Yeah. And did you ever have any issues with your food that you know of? I mean,
Yeah. That about happened a couple times and stuff. And a lot of times, Nikolai and I, we'd have food and take it back to our room. And Nikolai was a great cook. He'd carry a hot plate and we'd just cook in the room. Because it wasn't safe for us to go into restaurants or anything like that. Now we'd get back to the motel. We'd go straight to the motel room.
So, how many times it's happened to me a handful of times where fans have jumped in the ring and you got to fight them and all that shit. How many times have the fans jumped in the ring on you?
A couple tried it but back in a lot of them places like that, especially at ringside, the police were very good.
Okay.
I mean, law enforcement, they didn't mess around back then, and things were totally different then. If you wanted to take a chance on getting in that ring, you might get popped with a belly club. And they'd sit there. I mean, a lot of them guys would sit facing the crowd with their back to the ring because they knew they didn't have to worry about the wrestlers, and they'd face the crowd. And if you wanted to challenge them, go right ahead. I've seen them have to take a few guys out and handcuff them and take them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's it, man. Yeah, I said myself, idiot. I said, what an idiot, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you had been in the Mid-Atlantic and Georgia and stuff, and then you're in Louisiana, you're in Texas, you're in, you know, all these great, warm, somewhat maybe even tropical states, you know, Pensacola. Then you go directly opposite to AWA in Minnesota. How was the connection to that? What was the connection to that? But then also, how was
Sergeant Slaughter got me up there.
Okay, I figured.
Because he was very close with the Ganyas and all that and stuff and everything, and he was hoping that we could eventually do the gimmick, you know, and that's when he got into the thing with G.I. Joe, which was a great thing for him and stuff, you know. So golly, Ned, that was really, really good. But yeah, Sergeant Slaughter got me up there. Did.
Okay.
And he was also a big help getting me into the WWF too.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
How was that weather, getting used to Minnesota weather after being in the South?
It took a while, but I know I was used to cold weather and stuff in Virginia where I had traveled got up there and stuff. And I just put on the warm clothes and all that and stuff and shoot. I had to put the heater thing in the vehicle so they wouldn't freeze up at night, you know, stuff like that. And had to be careful driving in the ice. So the snow wasn't so bad. It's the ice that's bad. So.
Right.
And some of the colder places was like the Green Bay was real bad in Chicago. Minneapolis had its moments too. So and some at real cold, you don't stay out any more than you have to. That's for sure.
you'll have a Boris statue. Speaking of statue and Boris and Frozen, you were honestly, I mean, we've talked to many guys that have had action figures, but your action figure was one of the original action figures. You actually had that with Steve Rosenthal and Remco, and you had Wolfie D. I will say this, that his action figure is on par with one of the more expensive ones of all time. It's actually a very sought after collectible item. Talk about maybe when you got that action figure. Now I know
I'm probably more of a mark about it than you are, Boris. But what I mean by that is, like, was it really cool to get your own action figure there at that point?
Oh, yeah, 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 because I could have never imagined anything like that anyway. But what was great, you know, getting to do that with them, but getting to do that with Sheik Adnan LKC, who I loved. Yeah. I loved Adnan dearly, and John Nord the Barbarian and stuff. So that was really cool to get to do that with them guys.
Oh man, Nord's a different guy, right? He's an original, right? Nord's he's truly an original.
Yeah. And what a hoss too! I mean, so
yeah,
huge so, man, mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, you've been with Brody and been with Nord the Barbarian, and I know they know each other and were buddies, but talk about did you see any differences in them? They were, I mean, somewhat, they did the Huss thing, and talk about John Nord and Bruiser Brody a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Brody was just a great guy, great worker, man. He was snug, golly, Ned. And as long as you went hard at him and stuff, you was okay and stuff. You know, if you went the round, he'd eat you up.
Oh, but, okay, gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, and I impressed him when the first time I got in the ring with him in Dallas. He wanted to be snug, and I let him have it. And he says, "Man, because that's the way to do it." I go, "I like that," you know. And he was, and well, we got along real good after that. So, but man, that boot. He put that boot up there and stuff, boy, and I took that thing really hard, took a big giant bump for him and stuff, you know, so he was real happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. him and Nord were a great big team, and shoot, I think things would have hadn't happened like it did. Him and Barbarian or John Nord would have ended up tagging up there with Vince at WWF.
Wow.
That would have been incredible.
That would have been incredible. Yeah. They might still be talking about them like the Road Warriors today. You know what I mean? I've never even like put that in my mind together that would be in New York. But that would have been amazing.
They were so big and rugged looking and snug. Yeah. Yeah. And I think they would have probably ended up tagging in Japan too. And they'd have made a ton of money together over there as a tag team.
Absolutely.
Now, I've heard this rumor, and I'm not trying to spread a rumor that's false on this. Please don't think this. But I heard that he was making up towards $20,000 a month in Japan, Brody. I know you probably don't know that figure, but I've heard that in recent times that he was making close to $20,000 a month in Japan. And I just can't imagine. That's amazing money.
Oh, yeah. 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 He was drawing big money over there and stuff. And, that thing that happened with Jose Gonzalez just made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah,
you know,
no joke.
If you don't want to use, if you didn't want to use him, fire him and not book him back again.
Right, exactly.
If they didn't want to use him, I mean, what Jose Gonzalez did was absolutely horrific and totally uncalled for. Now, if you didn't want the guy. Disqualify him, do the finish there, and then not book him and don't bring him back.
Right. Get rid of him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Get rid of him. Yeah.
Man, that's a big what if, you know, but
yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Man, so you worked with some of the like best tag teams like around. You worked in and all that. Who do you think, and I know this is probably a hard question because this is one of those that I hate when people ask me, but like, who was your favorite team to work with? Who did you have the best matches with, you think?
Man, that is a tough one. what I'd have to say was the Mid-Atlantic stuff, the matches that Don and I, Don Canodo and I had with Steamboat and Youngblood. They were phenomenal.
I bet.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, they were over like $1 million. I said they were just the girls just loved them. I mean, they were so believable, and their timing. I mean, everything about them was just spot on. And also two of my other favorites too. When I was growing up too was Jack and Jerry Briscoe. I loved them too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I love. That's why I was so happy, and I was very glad and blessed to get to do that angle with Jack and Jerry before I left Charlotte.
Right. So okay. That's awesome.
I was tickled to pieces to do that for them. So because I love Jack Briscoe anyway. Yeah. I mean, he was so strong. Golly, Ned, did you ever get to work with him?
No, I never did. He was an agent in WWE when I was there.
Yeah. No, I was talking about Jack. Did you ever get to work with Jack?
Neither one. No.
Yeah, man, he had the tendon strength of a freaking bear. If he didn't want to let you go, you weren't going to get away from him. I mean, he was brutal.
Yeah.
What a great amateur wrestler he was. God, I heard Ned, he was just he was incredible.
Yeah.
he could show me moves up there. He could get in the ring with Jack, and the Funks were the same way. Both Terry and Dora were the same way. Mm-hmm. These guys were so good. They could help you put moves on them, and you didn't realize what you was doing because they was doing all
right.
<of it.
laughs> I've definitely been in the ring with people like that that put you where they want you, and you end up on top.
They'd make you look 10 times better than you are because they were so good.
Yeah.
You know, Terry Funk was the same way. You know, and I worked the first time I got to work Terry Funk in a TV match in Atlanta and stuff and everything. He says, Terry used to rib me all the time about my head, you know. He said, come on, head. He called me head all the time. Because I used to rib him. I used to, I did all kinds of voices anyway. So I used to rib him those parts that he had, like in Roadhouse and then Paradise Alley and stuff.
Yes.
He says, golly, Ned, head. He goes, you know my parts better than I did.
Can you still do one for us?
Oh, yeah. What was that? He used to do Paradise Alley. You puke!
Man, Terry was just an original, too. You know, he's one of those that
tell Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, you're not drinking. You're out of here.
Oh, man. I love that. Oh,
I swear, my favorite Terry Funk interview that was just hilarious was he. First shoot, forgot what Tojo Yamamoto's name was, and during the interview he kept going, what is his name? That slant-eyed Japanese thing. He couldn't think of his name. He just kept going on about it. It was great.
he was hilarious. I'll tell you a funny Terry Funk story.
Please.
He was on a plane, Jimmy Hart had told me about it, said coming on a plane and stuff, and he's getting on there late, and he's dragging his bag, and sometimes Terry, but he'd limp real bad because some of the bumps he took was just incredible, and he was having a hard time this one day on the plane, and he's struggling to get his bag up in the oversized bin, and the stewardess comes up and says, "Sir, let me help you with that," and Terry turns and looks at her, "Honey, if I wanted your help, I'd ask for it." And all the boys just busted out laughing. And they said she turned red and she got ticked off and just stormed off. And he goes, "I was just being honest with her." He goes, "I've got this under control. Can everybody see that?"
That is good.
He was classic. I love Terry Funk.
Yeah,
Ned, he helped me. He helped me in a lot of ways and stuff. I mean, great psychology and all that. He was fun to travel with and great to be around in the dressing rooms. I mean, he just had so much knowledge about the business and stuff. It was just incredible. And he was one of my favorite world champions. Terry Funk was.
He's one of those guys that you talk to, and even though he'd, you know, be the first time you met him, he act like he knew you forever.
He was like that. Anytime he'd see you and recognize you and stuff, boom, you just start your conversation like the last time he saw you, you know. He was a great guy. And another guy like that too is Ted DiBiase. Ted's like that.
Yeah.
But he came from that territory, the the Amarillo and all that stuff, because Ted goes back way back in those days. And he was another great guy like that, DiBiase was, because he helped me a lot when I first went to Louisiana, because Ted was real big down there when I moved down there, when I started my Russian gimmick there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a big help to me in that territory. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say Ted is one of those guys that you could consider probably one of the greatest guys to never have held either the NWA or the WWF world title. You could probably, I know maybe, you know, Roddy Piper.
And he should have. I mean, if anybody should have had that belt put on him, it was Ted DiBiase, without a doubt.
Absolutely. You know, they talk a lot about Magnum and stuff, but I think Ted should have won it too, for sure, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because he's very polished. I mean, everything he did in the ring just looked great and solid, and a very polished worker. And I always enjoyed watching him work. So,
he was awesome. Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here. And if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com. That's B-U-I-E Homes.com. Or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee.
Support for Live and in Color with Wolfie D is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WOLFIE at manscaped.com. If my math's correct, that's about 8 million balls.
You know, one team that I always liked watching you guys work was Demolition. I always loved watching the Bolsheviks and Demolition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bill Eady and Barry Darso. Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal. Because y'all were all four horses. You know what I mean? Y'all were big boys.
Yeah.
You look like you could put some damage on people. And I just thought y'all four worked together really well. Talk about Demolition a little bit.
Right. I got to work I got to work a lot with Bill and stuff, you know, back in the day when he was a mass superstar. So that helped him when he got to do the other gimmick and stuff, because he was phenomenal both gimmicks. He's another one of the greatest mask guys ever in the business.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
That mask superstar was a phenomenal gimmick.
You know, I'm a big fan of Jardine too, but definitely Bill Eady.
Yeah, Jardine. Yeah. Him and Jardine, two big guys and two of the best masked men ever to work that gimmick. And it's a shame that's gone, because that was one of the greatest gimmicks ever, was that hood, that mask.
Yeah. It was.
Because the suspense of who's behind that mask and stuff. Yeah. I mean, It was like me when I was, because I remember going to see Jardine. I finally got to meet him years down the road, but I'd go to see him before I broke into business in Virginia here in Roanoke and stuff and everything. And man, he worked in matches where they just about had that mask off, and the people were just in a frenzy. Somehow he'd do something, screw the baby face, and pull that mask back down, and he's gone, you know. People, he just knew how to get that suspense and stuff and drive people into a frenzy. And it's a shame nobody knows how to do that no more.
It really is.
Because it's either the first guy on the show now with a mask, or it's some sort of luchador type gimmick.
Luchador is about the only ones left. You don't have that heel. I loved that growing up, man. I loved the masked heel gimmick. I the masked superstar or whatever, whoever. I loved the mask gimmick as a kid.
I'll tell you what happened one time. I'm trying to remember. I think it was Starlane Arena. Some fan got a hold of a daggum chair. And Wahoo about had his mask off, and they threw the chair and stuff, and then I guess Wahoo moved or something, keep him getting hit by the chair, and Danko Jardine picked that chair up and knocked Wahoo out with that thing, and I thought the fans was going to kill the guy that threw the chair, because he helped Jardine. It was a fan that did that, trying to hit Jardine with the chair, and he hit Wahoo with it.
Oh, that's magic. That's
magic. The gimmick.
Yeah, that was good. They took advantage of that fan doing something that stupid like that. Yeah. That poor fan got killed too.
Yeah, that's magic. Good. Yeah. Man. Holy
classic
crap.
Finish.
Yes, absolutely.
No doubt. So I'm kind of looking at some of the teams you got to work when you were with Nikolai, and I guess let's talk about that real quick. So Iron Sheik, is this true? This was right around the time he got released from the WWF, and basically then you were able to slide in and be that with Nikolai. Is that kind of the timing
of the thing? Sadly, it was at that thing when he got busted with Duggan that time.
That's
when that happened. Yeah, it wasn't long after that I was able to slide in there and stuff. But golly, him and Nikolai were so established and had so much heat.
Oh,
good
man.
Grief. It was brutal.
They were a great team. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And people wanted to kill him so bad it wasn't even funny, you know? So.
Right. Yeah, that's great. But I would love to hear, because, I mean, I've heard, and please don't take this the wrong way, because I know he's gone and I don't want to make it sound like, you know, but I did hear that Nikolai was pretty thrifty. Let's just say that. He knew how to save a dollar. And I've even heard that he could cook on his...
He was very, very, he was very, very, very frugal with his money. Very frugal. Yeah.
Did he give you any advice on that and why he was like that? I mean, I'm sure you'd heard of that from other guys before, but you know,
because of where he grew up and where he came from,
Lithuania,
you know,
right?
But to say that, you know, he had a nice home, nice property, had 50 acres of land, and he just put money back and stuff and everything, but he grew up that way because of where he grew up at and stuff and everything. That's why he left where he came from, was because nothing really belonged to you, you know. The government owned everything.
That's a good point. So you also got a chance to work with the Bushwhackers some too.
Talk about Luke and Luke. Classic. Yeah, because I knew them back in the day. I was with them in the Charlotte territory when they came in as the sheep herders. I got to travel a lot of miles with them and stuff. So those were fun days. Yeah, that was way back in 1980.
Yeah.
81. Yeah.
So we were just had our good buddy of the show, Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, and, you know, he's good buddies with Wolfie D, and so that makes him a good friend of the show. And he was telling us some funny Andre stories and, you know, talking about how when he was tagging with Lynn Denton, if the Andre wanted Lenny to go out partying, he would come in and flip the bed over and stuff like that. Do you have any funny or interesting Andre stories at all?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I know. I rode with him in I got to ride in his van with him a couple times and stuff. And shoot, they had to take all the seats out because Andre sat in all the way in the back. So there was no captain seats in the middle of the van and stuff and everything. So,
so if you were in the captain seat, you were sitting beside Andre, essentially, is the case. Basically.
Or you were sitting in the front because they didn't have none in the middle because he sat on the bench in the back. But so that way he could stretch his legs out.
Gotcha. Oh, my goodness. In a van.
The captain's chairs are those middle ones, Jimmy.
I'm just thinking of that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So did you get along with Andre pretty good, though?
Oh, yeah. I never had any trouble with him or not and stuff and that because I always worked hard with him anytime, most time I ever worked with him, I think I did a mixed tag or was a six-man tag one time and then always the battle roles and stuff and I always took big bumps for him.
I'm sure he loved that. But, it's probably like Brody in that thing.
If he was serious about the business and worked hard, you know, which Nikolai and I always did and stuff, I mean, that's what Andre liked the most about is you doing right by the business.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing with him.
Yeah. So here's something that I always like to hear. I always crack up at good ribs. Who was the best ribber you were ever around? And give me a good rib story.
Oh, well, there's so many.
Yeah. Back in your time, that was the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because AWA was some good ribbers up there, if I'm not mistaken. They were pretty good ribbers, especially Kurt Hennig and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kurt Hennig was one of the best ones and stuff. So.
Right.
Yeah.
He seemed to have the less of it was malicious. You know, some of the guys had those malicious ribs that were very, you know, seemed a little bit, wow, are you not a good person? You know, but I've heard, I've talked to Greg Gagne before, and he was talking about how Kurt put a turd in his bag and then Kurt won a vehicle or something in a match. And then this guy cut the brakes on the vehicle and stuff. It was some crazy stories that Kurt got himself into trouble sometimes, but yeah. Did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, Nord got the rockers one time and stuff. And I know he ended up doing, I think he did something similar like that to one of their bags. It might have been Sean's. And then he put a lock on it. He locked it to something with a lock. And Sean thought that's all it was. He was getting ready to take a couple planes to try to get home. So he didn't find that thing in his bag till he got home. So that was a long ride for that to be in his bag, you know?
Yeah. Cause you could you could put a turd on the windowsill in Minnesota and it would freeze. And then you put it in the bag.
Oh, yeah.
It's not frozen when you get home. So
right. Exactly. Yeah. And, all he thought that Nord did, and he's like, well, ha, ha, ha. He put a lock on his bag, you know. He said, you know, man, that's a good one there. And Nord says, hey, Boris, he's going to find out how real good it is when he gets home. Get that bag open.
Oh, man.
Hey, I want to ask you another tough question here because you mentioned the Armstrongs. Armstrongs are one of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
All of them. Every one of them is some of my favorite people in the business that I've met.
A beautiful family. That was a beautiful family.
Yeah.
I loved all of them.
Who do you think?
Yeah, I loved all of them like brothers.
Yeah, that's awesome. Absolutely. And I'm to this day still great friends with Brian. Bullet was always good to me. And like I said, I got to work with all of them, and they are all so good. Who do you think, and I know this is hard, who do you think the best Armstrong was?
Oh, man, that is a tough one. Good grief.
Because most people say Brad, but then a lot of people... You know, attitude era, you might say Road Dog because of his mic skills, but then Bullet had the charisma and Bullet could just work, you know, I mean, but a lot of people think it's Brad, and I'm just curious as to what you think.
Well, as far as working and stuff, because Brad did a lot of stuff. He was so polished. He was a great polished worker.
Mm-hmm. Similar to Steamboat.
In fact, Brad reminded me a lot of, I always thought it had been great if it could have been worked out somewhere where somebody could have teamed up Steamboat and Brad Armstrong. I think that'd have been a great tag team.
Yeah, it would have been good.
Pretty as a picture, man. I tell you.
Yeah, because Brad had beautiful arm drags and his drop kicks were perfect all the time and way up in the air they look good not just here and there. Every time he did one, it was just beautiful. It was beautiful to watch because he was so polished with everything he did. So
yeah.
Because everything looked like it came so natural to him.
Yeah.
All their Armstrongs every one of them make a great comeback. Every one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Good grief. Wow, man. You're going to, they'd have you flying for sure.
Now that you say that, I can't get that out of my head. Steamboat and Brad Armstrong, man almighty. That would have been a tag team. Wow.
Yeah.
So you talked about him a little bit earlier, and you know, it's so funny to me as a grown adult who's known a little bit about the business now. You know, all the Russians that we hated, you know, were never from Russia. So you had, you know, Ivan from Montreal, you from Virginia, Nikita from Minnesota, Barry Darso was from Minnesota, you had Nikolai from Lithuania. So I guess your accent, because you talked about him earlier, when you did your Russian promos, I did hear some Ivan in there. I guess, did you just pick up on that alone and just, that's just your natural Russian imitation? Or
like I said, Ivan was one of my favorites when I was in school. I picked up on that when I was in junior high school.
Okay,
and stuff.
Gotcha.
I just practiced from there. And Oldie used to rip me all the time. Said, "Golly, Jim," he says, "you graduated from the Ivan Koloff School of Broadcasting." I went, "That's right. Don't forget it, Anderson." He busts out laughing.
Oh man!
But also, I learned a lot too from my old manager, Chris Markov. He was a great manager. I love to imitate Chris.
That's great. Yeah. Have you heard from Ole in a while? When's the last time you've heard from Ole?
No. In fact, I heard, sadly, the last time I heard, Ole's pretty much bedridden now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Because he's fighting MS and plus he had that bad fall off his roof years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's horrible. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about absolutely. Somebody that means a lot to me, and I know he meant a lot to you. So I'm this know-nothing kid playing in a rock band out in Blacksburg, Virginia, and all of a sudden I start noticing this pretty big guy coming in that looks like a pro wrestler. And I befriended him, and his name was Kenny Steele. And Kenny brought me in the business.
Yeah.
Taught me everything I knew about it and helped me get in and helped me become a manager and helped me do all these fun things that I never thought I'd get to do. And I remember one day I was working down in Blacksburg at a record store in the middle of town, and Kenny comes in there to see me, and I said, "Man, I'm about to get off." And he says, "You are?" And I said, "Yeah, I just got this big VHS tape collection from my brother. I hadn't ever had them, and I've got them from home, and I brought them here to Blacksburg. Can you want to come home and watch them?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "What do you got?" And we ended up putting in the 1988 Survivor Series. And obviously you're part of that massive Survivor Series tag team match. Talk about how awkward that was, because you're essentially standing right beside the guy that you're maybe going to face in the ring. That was kind of a lot of guys, right? Was that not a lot?
Yeah. That was a total different type of match, you know?
Yeah.
The way they did that. So, it was very, very unique for sure.
Yeah. What's funny is Kenny said, you know, he said, "I've talked to," and he says, "You know, I know Boris," and he was talking about you. And man, Kenny loved you to death, Boris. You know,
I loved him too. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
Because we got to wrestle each other a lot, and we got to tag too. So that was he was a fun guy to tag with too.
Yeah. So, yeah. Tell Wolfie a little bit about Kenny. I've always wanted to have somebody else talk about him for a minute.
Okay. Yeah. He was just a big, strong boy and stuff. And it's just a shame that he came along after the territories parts and stuff and everything. Because he'd have been a great fit anywhere because of his size.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenny was good.
And then he opened up a, shoot, he fixed up a thing up there.
Right.
He got a nice ring and stuff, you know, kind of like what the Crockett's had, and fixed up a nice area at the place and stuff. But he had that ring that he took to we did a lot of wrestling shows in it, and it was a fun ring to work in.
Yeah, he had the whole setup, and this is before Billy Corgan even thought about getting into wrestling, Wolfie. Like, you know how he redid that whole set with the Turner Studio there? Yeah, he had that whole thing set up, and it was beautiful in there. And I saw you and Bob Caudill standing in there, Boris, and I thought I was going back in time, you know? So,
yeah, because he brought Bob up there because he had really fixed up a lot like the old Crockett Studio was.
Yeah, exactly.
From Mid-Atlantic and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that
exactly.
was just because Bob Caudill just loved that, and what a nice, sweet guy he was, man. He was, like I said, that was one guy I got to watch growing up, and then I got to work with him and do interviews with him and stuff, you know. So that was a pretty neat deal for me too, you know.
Yeah.
And like I said, Ole and Gene and Johnny Weaver and all them great guys, Paul Jones and Wahoo and that's couldn't ask for any more than that, you know.
Yeah. Me and Kenny always used to talk about this, and now Wolfie and I talk about it, is the great announcers. Like, you know, he's a Memphis guy, so obviously it's Lance Russell. And I really can't argue that he's not the greatest, but I always hear Bob Caudill in my head. So it's funny that it's like something about Lance and Bob that to me was like they were just kind of folksy good guys that just their voices were just perfect for wrestling. You know what I mean? And it's felt like it was like an uncle or maybe even a grandfather. And they're just so great about talking about pro wrestling. And yeah, there's Gordon Solie, and he's probably maybe the greatest of all time. I don't want to argue that about any Gordon fans out there, but to me, you can't get much better than Lance and Bob Caudill, in my opinion, you know. Right. So
Me too. Yeah, because the great thing about Bob Caudill was he was such a great storyteller,
right?
You know, explaining what's going on in the ring and stuff, and maybe if fans are tuning in that might not have tuned in the last week or two before, he'd bring everybody up to date and stuff, and just able to tell a story and stuff, you know, on the mic like that and stuff. And it was so natural the way it came out and stuff and everything. He was very polished, at that job and great at it, without a doubt. So,
Yeah. And to hear Lance Russell call a Lawler Dundee match, there's not much better on this planet, you know. So, I've never heard a good Bob Caudill impersonation. I've heard some great Lance Russell impersonations, but it's almost like Bob has got that voice nobody can imitate or something. I don't know, but
right, exactly.
If you can, listeners, let us know. We'll put you on the air. So, but Boris, man, it's been an honor to have you on here.
Absolutely, man.
It's really
it's been my honor to be here and stuff. I mean, it was wrestling was for me was a big dream, kind of like what Gary Rossington said about being a big part of Leonard Skinner. He goes, it's a big dream you have, and then one day you wake up and it's all real, that's what blows you away, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're talking about the greatest American rock and roll band ever, right there, buddy. Leonard Skinner.
Yeah,
I love it.
Those were my heroes when I was in school and stuff and everything. And I got to run into him and his wife Dale out on the road up in Atlanta and stuff years ago. And that was neat. And I met Ricky Medlock too. I got Ricky's autograph, you know, back when he was Blackfoot, and then again when he's with Skinner, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
His life came full circle, and now Ricky's one of the last of the Muscle Show guys.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk that the Russian Boris Zhukov loved Leonard Skinner? Who would have ever thunk that?
Yeah, exactly.
Medlock's a big wrestling fan. He loves wrestling.
Okay.
Because when I met him, he recognized me at a motel and stuff, and wanted me to come over and meet him because he wanted my autograph. I mean, you're talking about getting blown away. That was back when me and Nikolai were tagging. And yeah. I flipped out on that one.
Yeah. You're like, well, let me get yours first.
Right, exactly. I still got the picture that I still got the one he signed with me. Yeah. That was back in 1990.
For me, it was always Kiss, and wrestling got me to be able to meet Ace Frehley one time. Me and Brian Lawler worked each other on a show, and then the guy that was running it was one of my buddies, and took me back, and I didn't even know Ace was there, but he was there signing his book, and we took a picture with him and everything. So yeah, that's when I was like, wow, I just got to meet fucking Ace Frehley.
I can't tell you. I'm a big Rolling Stones fan, but I tell you can't get much better than that 70s rock from Kiss and Skinner and I mean Zeppelin and I mean all those great bands. But I tell you what, man, I love music and I love
And the thing with all them guys back from that area was the work ethic they had. I mean, they worked so freaking hard and stuff. The young bands today don't want to put in half the work that those guys did.
No, they
that's
don't.
Why they're not as half as good. I mean, that freaking Ronnie Van Zant, Gary said Ronnie Van Zant, they had to practice 10 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah,
with that guy. They said he was like a freaking football, a ruthless football coach. He says, he goes, the more we practice, the better we're going to sound. And they'd play 10 hours a day.
One of my favorite stories about Ronnie Van Zant is they're recording in the studio with Al Kooper down in Muscle Shoals. And it's not doing what Ronnie wanted. And you may know this story better than I do, of course. But he took Al and put him in the car and said, we'll handle it. Is that kind of the story? That's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he was trying to mess up. He didn't want to put Simple Man on the album.
Right.
Ronnie put him in the car. He says, we'll take care of this. You go on down the road and stuff. And, we'll finish this up. Go on. And, I heard another great one about him the other day too and stuff. I don't know who did this. They were doing a show somewhere. And he looked out and two of his truck drivers had been appointed as security guards down in front of the stage, and he blew a head gasket. Oh, yeah. He said, what are you people doing? He says, what are we going to do if something happens to these two guys and get hurt and we don't have nobody to drive our equipment to the next show?
Right. Yeah.
So somebody got reamed out on that one.
Oh, man.
He goes, we cannot afford to lose our truck drivers.
Right, you know? Exactly.
And he knew that well himself because his dad was a truck driver. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, again, Boris, man, we totally appreciate you. I don't know if Boris is at this point, should we call you James or Boris? But we appreciate it.
Oh,
man,
sure.
For you coming on here. I mean, seriously, we've been doing this once a week for over 2 years now. And I've told Jimmy, I said, buddy, I am running out of friends in this business that I can ask favors of. I said, so there's plenty of people out there that we can interview. I said, but some of them I just don't know. I never crossed the paths with them. And I just want you to know that I appreciate you answering Jimmy and coming on here for us, man. It means a lot.
Man, you're more than welcome. Happy to do so and stuff. And sir.
Two and a half years, over 100 guests, and the first one I book is Boris Zukov. So I'm not doing too bad so far, right, Wolf?
Yeah. I told him, I said, dude, I have run out of friends in this business.
Yeah, as a sheik would say, not bad for a jabroni.
I love it.
Absolutely. That's a perfect way to end it.
Excellent.
I love it, man. Thank you so much, sir, for coming on, man.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care, buddy. We'll get you back on sometime down the road, man. This is great.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. Y'all take care and have a great day.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Again, we appreciate you, Boris. And Jimmy, You know, I always ask this question, and I really already know the answer to it. But anyway, it's kind of our thing. What do you got next?
Yeah, the listeners can say it along with me. Ask Wolfie D anything. DJ, hit that music. All right, we are back with Ask Wolfie D Anything, and Wolfie D, Boris is very good person, yes?
It's very good interview, nice guy, enjoyed that a lot. Like I said, you know, getting to talk to somebody that I, you know, knew who he was, obviously, but
yeah,
had never had any experience with him, so that was cool, man. He's still sharp as a tack, and
yes.
You know, that's cool, man.
Dude, and what I think is just hilarious is that commie loves Lynyrd Skynyrd, man. I love that, dude. And here's the thing. It's just awesome that he, like, his biggest gimmick is a Russian, villain, and he loves some, like, one of the most American bands ever, you know what I mean? Like, it's just ridiculous, but I love it.
Virginian, you know?
Yeah, he's a Virginian, which, you know, I gotta love that, too, but, dude, Boris is just so cool, and here's the thing, man, I will text with him, and, dude, you know, he was texting me after we did the interview, and he was just sending me some stuff. And here, let me tell you something. He sent me a video about the Iron Sheik being the Undertaker's worst roommate and how he blow dried his mustache. And then I told him, I said, Wolfie's got a great story about him blow drying his mustache. Yeah. And he said the Iron Sheik tortured Nikolai for many nights. They roomed together, late long showers, blow drying his mustache. Sheik would tell Nikolai the mustache, very important to Persian people. Anyway, that's awesome.
He's a character.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, but anyway, so I tell you what, while we're at it, let's ask some questions. What do you say?
All right.
Well, our very first question is from Jason Newsom, okay? And this is from Facebook. And he says, and this one is kind of, you've covered this one before, but we'll kind of cover it. So tell about your experience getting into wrestling, how that came about. I remember in high school, J-O-H-S baby, one of my friends saying you wrestled at the fairgrounds while we were in school. I remember a Road Warrior shirt that you would wear to school. So I'm not really asking about the intro to wrestling. We kind of know that. I want to hear about this Road Warriors t-shirt, man.
I drew it with magic marker on a fucking blank t-shirt.
For real?
Yeah, and I would wear it. I mean, it was all right. It wasn't great, but I didn't give a fuck. I wore it anyway. And now, when I was still in school, I had not made it to the fairgrounds yet. But pretty quickly after that, because see, my graduating class was 1992, so I was at the fairgrounds in early 1993. So I could see where people that went to school with me can kind of, you know, put those two together there. Still in school or whatever, but it was a little bit after that, because I actually quit school, and I mean, it was my junior year, so I guess 91 or something like that.
Okay.
And I do have a GD, however. I didn't get
good enough,
30 something, but I got it.
It counts.
I didn't need it at the time, so man, that's the Road Warrior shirt. I drew it. It was the picture of them on the front of the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Hawk. One of them had the gloves on with the little tassels on it.
Oh, okay.
You know what picture I'm talking about? And it's got
kind
of weird lighting or whatever.
But, yes.
Yeah, so that was the picture that I drew, and I would wear that, you know, a little bit. And like I said, it was okay. I have no idea where that shirt is. It's probably gone by now.
Right.
But, I mean, I know it is, but where it ended up, maybe in a landfill, I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, probably threadbare now anyway. But do you have any, is there any pictures of it at all? Or
I doubt it, man. Yeah. I don't even have hardly any pictures from my childhood and stuff. The way stuff went down when my mom and Pete's house was cleaned out, I just didn't, things were not given to me. So
man,
just how it goes on that one, I don't have hardly
Yeah. So I know, let's tell a little bit of this story here. So I do know, if I could tell your story here real quick, since Jason asked me, you know, instead of you, I'm just kidding. So you basically, you talk to Rick and Gypsy, and you basically have to talk your mom and talk, say, hey, you know, and Pete's like not wanting to let you in the business.
Right.
And you're talking to Rick and you're like, hey, can you get me with Gypsy? Am I telling it right here? Basically,
Pretty much, man. I mean, I didn't know who really we were going. I don't know if I knew who we were going. Yeah, I guess I didn't know who we were going to see.
Sure.
But I don't know that I really even knew much about Joe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But again, it was just a thing where Rick set it up, I believe. And, you know, took me with him and Pete. I mean, Pete was the one that I really had to convince. And met them out there. And, you know, we get there and there's Joe and he just starts showing us stuff. And, you know, Rick had already been training with him a little while. And, you know, I never gave Rick a dime and I never gave Joe a dime. So it was kind of just a thing where I was kind of tagging along with them to work out and train with Joe. And that was the person in the ring that was an experienced wrestler that had the credentials to train somebody. So when people say, who trained you? Fuck, I got in the ring with Gypsy Joe the first time I got into a fucking ring. So
Right. I wasn't even trying to take it down that road, Wolfie, but I appreciate that you did. Yeah.
Rick was responsible for bringing me to, you know, that, to hooking it up. You know what I'm saying?
He
broke me in, we'll say, you know.
Sure.
Had the experience in the ring was Gypsy Joe.
Sure. Yeah.
Love you, Rick. I love Ruby. He don't love me. Yes, I do.
And the saga continues. Anyway, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jason, for the question. Thank you, Wolfie, for that answer. So the next question is Brad Freeland, and he says, this is funny. I think I understood it after I read it about 10 times. So it says, if a guy is spending more time fixing his tights than selling, at what point do the live rounds start?
So he's saying if somebody's doing that while you're
you know, when a guy like maybe gets a wedgie, you know, like Lex Luger,
sometimes you got to. I mean, I know what he's saying, and there are times when you think now's not the time to do that, you know.
Right
You know, unless your balls are hanging out or something, wait a minute. You're really be selling hard. You might not want to make those adjustments at that moment, but I can relate because there was like when I was doing Slash and I was wearing those shin guards, I eventually ended up having the tape because, you know, they hook, they go around and they hook, right?
Yeah. Well,
sometimes that hook would come undone. So I eventually started taping them with electrical tape so they wouldn't come off. But
yeah,
those motherfuckers would come undone. And I mean, I'd have to fix it, you know, or the motherfuckers were coming off.
Right. Yeah. And they were like catcher shin guards, right?
Yeah.
So those are like easy to take off almost anyway, you know, they're kind of a pain in the butt, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, man, there's sometimes, you know, it is the wrong moment, but sometimes you just got to make some adjustments.
Right. It's so funny, like, and please don't ever think of me as looking at Lex Luger, but Lex Luger used to always get that daggone wedgie, man, and like it would be like half a butt cheek sticking out, and he would be like, you know, like walking around flexing, and then he would do the little pick it out, you know. It's like, oh man.
So you know, I did actually because I didn't make an adjustment, actually hurt my knee pretty good one time. I was my knee pad had slid down to where it was like just the top of my knee pad was just under my kneecap, right?
Yeah.
So I go to the second rope and do a forearm drop. I think it was on Doug Gilbert, actually.
Huh.
And so I'm landing on my knees and dropping the forearm across the head, neck area, whatever. And when I landed, that where the knee pad was down that low, it caused my thigh to kind of slide forward and my shin to push the opposite way, right? So it like sprained my knee like really bad, you know?
Yeah.
So I should have pulled my fucking knee pad up and I didn't.
Yeah. No kidding, man. That's horrible, bro. I'm sorry to hear that. Jeez. Yeah, man. Well, you know, live and you learn, right? At least you know, now that your knees, didn't you have a knee surgery anyway?
Yeah. So, yeah. Actually, though, I think it was the other knee. It's hard to remember which side I did what to half the time, but I think it was the other one. And now this knee needs some work, I believe. So,
good Lord. Anybody got any knees out there? Seriously.
Knees.
You need a secondhand knee. This stuff's getting too expensive, y'all. Seriously. Yeah, man. Well, I just, it's just a funny question, I think, is like, I can see sometimes, especially when the guy's like laying down on the ground and he's supposed to be selling and he's like adjusting his balls and his tights and stuff. Anyway.
Pick your spots, I guess.
Pick your spots. All right. So the next question and final one for the Boris Zukov episode. And so this one is Mac A. Ronan on Instagram, and he says, I really enjoyed the top 10 OMG moment show. It made me think of a quick question for Ask Wolfie. What are Wolfie and Jimmy's top three favorite movies of all time? Thank you, guys. Love the show.
Okay. I'm not sure how that relates.
Yeah, I know, right? But hey.
Where'd you get that from, homie?
I mean, who knows? But I appreciate that he asked, you know?
I do, too. I really do.
Because, I mean,
This is one of those questions that's so hard for me. I watch shit and I forget what I've seen or forget if I watch it.
Yeah.
But, man, just I know the fucking Terminator 1 is one of my favorite movies ever. So that's up there.
Yeah.
Man, I really like, just off the top of my head, I really like the Avengers. I like all the Marvel stuff, but I guess, you know, you would say that the first one, or maybe even Iron Man, you know, that was the first one where it was like, this is some cool shit. I'm glad they're finally fucking giving this shit some props and making it good. And it's not just cartoons anymore. And
Yeah,
I always love comics and all that stuff. And let's see. I guess I would have to go with Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah, dude. Great, great movie. I love it. Those are all three great. Now, you're wrong, however, because these are my three. No, I'm serious. I'm going to say my three. So, my number one is Goodfellas. I love that movie. Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, you know, just all the greatness of that and that story, how it was partially real. And then there were some fabrications. But Goodfellas, love that movie. It's one of those movies that if it's on, I'm pretty much going to stop and watch whatever part of it it's on. So, my second favorite is True Romance. This is one of the movies that Quentin Tarantino wrote. It's got Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette in it. Great movie, ensemble cast. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It came out technically like in the 93-94 time frame. It was kind of like right around Pulp Fiction. And because Quentin Tarantino wrote it, it does give you that vibe of a little bit like Tarantino style stuff. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's amazing. Yeah. Number three, and this one is my... this one could be my number one at all times, is Predator. I love that movie. That ensemble cast, Arnold, Jesse the Body, Carl Weathers, dude.
Oh, see, that's one I forgot, too. That's I know we said top three, but Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, bro. Yeah.
Very influential in so much. Like, I just that whole genre of... the muscles, and it made me want to draw those things and barbarians and all that kind of stuff, man. And actually made me want to work out more when I was younger, you know. I started trying to work out when I was younger than, say, 15. I was even earlier, 12, 11.
Yeah.
How old I was right then, but I like that. And this may make you and some of the listeners want to punch me in the face, but you mentioned Pulp Fiction. I've never seen Pulp Fiction. I've never seen Scarface. I've never seen Goodfellas. Now, I've seen parts of some of those, of all those, okay?
Yeah,
but I haven't watched the whole, but there's a bunch of like classic shit that you'd be surprised that I've never seen.
Well, I'm going to have to send you some Blu-rays, bro. Come on, man. But I get it. Hey, you know, sometimes it's just like, well, maybe I'm just not going to see those movies, you know. But
I'm not into, like, it's hard for me to watch a movie twice, no matter how much
I totally get that, yeah.
I just, I was like, I already know what's going to happen. Why don't I watch it?
Right.
I also can't get into stuff that's older, and because it's usually the visuals, you know, they're so outdated that it just, when I watch it, I can't watch this. I can't take it serious. You know what I mean?
Okay. So you're talking about like black and white movies and stuff?
Not necessarily. Well, black and white for sure, but
yeah,
it's stuff that it has any special effects.
Right.
I can't. Right. Can't. And the other thing is English dub overs. I can't do those either.
Yeah, those are garbage. I agree. I would rather read the movie, even though I don't love that. I would still rather read it than dub it over. Yeah. But I see what you're saying. But, you know, that's something that says how good Star Wars was, bro. Like,
yeah.
Think about that. Like, if Empire Strikes Back came on, even though you're probably not looking forward to it, you could watch it again because it's a great movie, you know?
Yeah.
And the beauty of that is like, that's how far ahead they were on those special effects, man.
And that was Star Wars, the original New Hope was the first movie I ever saw in theaters. My mom's
Nice.
And I think we went and seen it more than once, I'm pretty sure, quite a few times. So
I think Empire was my first because I was a little too young for, I don't know, I wasn't even born yet for the first one, maybe. So I can't remember when that one came out. Was that 77 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, great movies all the way around. Love them. But yeah, Empire's my favorite too. But anyway, I think you would like Goodfellas. True Romance, however, you should absolutely watch that movie. Absolutely. Yeah, I'd you may not.
Goodfellas, because I love Peaky Blinders. You know, stuff like I love that one. You know, and I know it's not the American Mafia, but it's still
gangsta. crime family. Yeah, exactly. You would like it. But anyway, well, that's our three Mac A. Ronan, or four in Wolfie D's case. I thought you were going to make me take Conan. You were like, hold on, Jimmy, you don't like that last one. Take Conan.
No,
I'm just kidding. Well, anyway, yeah.
No, and I remember real quick the watching Conan in the I think it's Conan. I say it that way, and
sure,
instead of Conan, which is Conan O'Brien. So I don't
Two different. I say Conan. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And see, I saw that in the movies with my mom and Pete, and I'll never forget how awkward the moment was when he's screwing that witch in the cave. It was awkward, you know.
Well, okay, while we're talking about Conan, I got to say this. Forever, the only one I'd ever seen was Destroyer, okay? Oh. With, you know, it was a great movie. It had Andre the Giant in it. You didn't know he was in it. And then Wilt Chamberlain's in it and stuff.
Yeah.
And I loved it, but it was so campy kind of compared to Barbarian. And then I went back and watched Barbarian when I was a couple years older. And I was like, oh, my God, this is heavy. This is awesome. You know, so it was like cartoonish a little bit, you know. But
yes, it was.
Yeah. He punches that camel. Grace Jones is in it. Anyway, I think they're both great movies. But
and I also thought that the Jason Momoa version was actually pretty good.
Dude, I know it's really
good. It was underrated. I thought that was good.
And I thought it fit in the line of the Arnold movies. You know what I'm saying? Like it could easily have been part of that collection. You know?
Right. So there's our Siskel and Ebert for the day.
Oh, man. Dude, that's our new job. Maybe we should just be a movie critic, you know, and quit this wrestling stuff, man.
Maybe. It'll be since you've taken over the book.
Yeah,
you're going a whole different direction.
All right, Wolfie, watch these 15 movies. Yeah. Dude. Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you all for awesome questions. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. Go enjoy your family. Hope you all enjoy us giving you this special awesome episode today with Boris. So
I get killed on Black Friday.
Yes. Which is even that a thing anymore? Is that even a thing?
I think so. I know they do it kind of like the whole month at a lot of places now to kind of take the crowd out of the one day. But I still think they do it in some places from what I understand. I have never in my life been out on a Black Friday. I'm trying to be convinced to do it this year.
Gosh. Yeah, we'll see. Good luck, brother. Yeah. Put some chokehold, put some sugars on people, you know. All right. Thank you, Wolfie D.
Yeah.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling. the podcast that's based on the old school but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the plastic chic Jared are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Join me, Gene Jackson, for the Jackson Interaction Podcast, where I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with people from the world of professional wrestling, as well as stand-up comedy. You can get them anywhere podcasts are available in both video and audio form, but you can find them all at GeneJacksonPod.com.
That's right, it's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudicca and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah!
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening. And we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
For your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging. Don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still livin' in color. From Rush, your mother. Utilize a hubcap unlike any other. Back in the day, I was N.O.D. and I was P to the G plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while and you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks from over on board later. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh? I got a cap for your dome.
I got a cap for your dome. We got a cap for your dome. We got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.